Hello, welcome to the chat room. Nice to have your company once again. Doing the chatting is the Dean of Sydney, Philip Jensen. Philip,
hello,
great
Phil.
To chat to you again. And we're going to tackle a huge topic in the next 28 minutes because we're going to talk about child raising.
We will have said everything there is to say.
In 28 minutes.
Yeah,
yes,
28
we,
years.
We wish. But when we start looking at parenting, governments are getting more involved than ever before.
Yes.
You know, there are childcare places. Companies are involved. They provide childcare places at work. Who should be most involved in childcare?
Parents are responsible. That's in one sense the beginning and ending of it, the responsibilities. However, there are bad parents, and some of the activities of parents are criminal. Therefore, it is right and proper that governments do hold parents accountable for what they're doing with their children. But governments often don't understand the importance of limiting their own powers and authorities. And there's always this tendency for government to push further and further in intruding in what parents could or couldn't do. You see it in terms of schools. Parents should determine what their children need to know to live in this world. Now, it's good that there are educationalists and government experts who will say, you parents don't know about computers and you need this. But more and more the governments are saying these are the subjects that are needed in school, and then they're under political pressure from all kinds of lobby groups as to we've got to include courses on this and on that and on this. And often the teachers are under terrible pressure because the basic skills of living in this world, like literacy and numeracy and things like that, are being squashed by all these other courses on drugs or on civics or on the curriculum skills being crowded in by lobby groups. And a school that wants to actually teach or raise children distinctively can have difficulty with government funding.
Such as some private schools that want to specifically have a Christian education
program. Now, it's not just kind of standards. It's not that, hey, these children are not being given a sufficient education.
Not learning to read and write. That's not the issue.
No, it's government's laying down what we need to know, and that's a bad thing.
Okay, so
likewise, free enterprise is a bad thing in education and raising children.
Right.
Because if the bottom line is the shareholder, the bottom line is the shareholder and is not the child for whom we are providing the education. And there is always the conflict. Now, I know the economic rationalists, and if you push it far enough, the Ayn Rand philosophers would say that, you know, if you're making the profit motive, it will turn out for the best. But it doesn't necessarily. A lot of childcare facilities are actually run as profit-making organisations.
Yes, and that's going to mean they're focusing on the bottom line, not on the child.
They are. Only focus on the child in as much as it helps the bottom line.
Yes, yes.
And so there will be lots of focus on the child, but they'll do that in order to sell their product to the parents, not because it is necessarily the best product.
What they want to do, yeah. We want to focus on the child. Now, so let's talk about the children. Every child is an individual from day one, aren't they? We've talked about this. Newborn babies, one of them's really alert, and you know, the other one's calm. And
that's right.
They're individuals.
They don't come out. The old thing about tabula rasa is if it's a blank sheet and then you write on it. They come out with personality.
Yes.
And it is different, yes. Within the same family, three siblings can be completely differently, and therefore how you relate to them has to be different. So to treat all your children equally, you actually have to treat them differently.
Right.
Which in one sense doesn't look just and fair. But if you treat them all the same, you'll discriminate against most of them.
It means the books that give you formulas can't be right because the kids aren't machines.
That's right. That's one of the big problems, that there is no, here are the 10 steps to raise the perfect child, or to raise the Christian child, or if you do this, it will automatically. Because you're not raising, they're not machines. They're not even, in this sense, animals, although with some teenagers, they're not even animals. They're humans, and they are as clever as you are.
Right.
They don't know enough yet, but they will in due time. And so it's an interaction with your peer by the time you've reached adulthood. And so they are changing you as much as you are changing them.
Because the parents are human as well. It's a human relationship.
It's a human-to-human relationship. Yes. And that's very hard for us to be in control of. which is what we want to be.
By the way, before we leave the teenagers, I came across a new word you'll like to describe a teenager's room. It's a floordrobe.
Yes, I did like
it. Because all the clothes are on the floor. Because it is...
Is that written in a dictionary yet, or is that just yours?
Will be one day.
Yes.
Because it is that kind of thing where every child is individual, what are the things we need to focus on with the children? Or what would be the first priorities?
The first priority, I think, has to do with the stability of the home in which we're raising them. And so the best thing that a mum and dad can do for their kids is to love their mum and dad.
Right.
God made us one so that we might have godly offspring. And so faithfulness between mum and dad, commitment to each other, gives the context in which children can be raised in security and trust and confidence.
Harmony.
Yeah, yep. It needs it. And when dad is at, walks out, it has devastating effects on children. The long-term effects of broken relationships on things like health is just dreadful. And so if we're having children, we have to put them first by putting our spouse first. And most people in their dealing with their divorce and their separations are still thinking of themselves. Oh, they talk about the children, but neither they nor the courts really make the children the top priority. They're the afterthought, and they're the ones who suffer the most through the process.
Being shuttled around and all the rest.
All the ideas of civilised divorce and the kids always are affected by it.
So focus on the spouse.
Yeah.
We need harmony. We need a loving atmosphere for the kids to be raised in, and that's the most important thing.
Well, faithful, I think, is better than loving and harmony.
All right.
I think faith. Marriage is built. We'll talk about marriage. We'll have a chat about marriage sometime. Seeing we're in trouble with our children, we should have been in trouble with our wives too. Faithfulness rather than love is the essence of marriage.
Right.
And so you get a sense of security when everything is reliable, dependable, trustworthy.
Yes.
And so that mum and dad are together creates for me a sense of security.
Yes.
Even if there's unhappiness between mum and dad.
But they still know
they're still together.
Anchored and
can
depend on. Yes.
It has to be a very violent relationship, real physical abusive relationship, before it becomes more unstable for the child. So even when mum and dad really struggle to get on with each other, the fact that they're still together means that I'm in a family and the world is outside.
Yep. Actually, that sense of dependability is important to give the kids if they think mum and dad are going to be there no matter what I do.
Yep.
Because I'm going to get things horribly wrong and I'm going to come home from school with a note from my teacher, which is blistering the paper. Mm. And they're still going to be there,
yep.
Even if they're annoyed with me.
Yep.
That's important, isn't it?
Well, the fact that mum and dad can fight and still be together means that if I'm in trouble and mum and dad go crook on me, that doesn't mean I'm kicked out of the family.
Yeah, the world doesn't end.
The world does not end. Yeah. There is life beyond the fight.
Right.
And that's fairly important.
So that's the anchor, that's the foundation.
That's a real foundation.
Life.
Yeah. And second one is, you've got to really love the child first. You've got to put the child at the forefront of your agenda, not the back of your agenda. Mm. Now, how that works out in practice can be very, very different. Because of my own family background, where my father had a very small printing business and had lots of commitments, he worked long, hard hours. But never once did I ever think he liked work more than me.
Right.
It was a dirty, rotten job he did.
Yes.
He came home filthy hands from being in the old letterpress print, it was lugging huge loads of paper, huge loads of type, filthy work. No one in their right mind enjoyed it. I mean, it was mind-numbing too. Anything that happened once happened 1,000 times. So although I'd often get up and he'd be gone for work and I'd, be going to bed before he came home and he didn't come and play with me all that much, I knew he was in the factory for me.
Yep.
I don't know how he told me that. I don't know how he communicated it, but I never once doubted.
Yes.
Whereas when people have a career where they're finding their fulfillment and satisfaction and enthusiasm and excitement in career, they may not be 80-hour week people. The children will know that the child is second.
That's where the centre of life is. It's out there, not here.
It's out there, not here.
Yes.
And I don't know how we convey it. I don't know how they intuit it. But
they pick it up.
They pick it up every time. A calling can be different because the children get caught up into the calling. So the artists' children become artists. The musicians' children get taught music, and so they're part of their parents.
Yes.
But it's the career ones which really put their children second, because we're taught now in society that you are what you are by your advancement in your career.
Mm. That's how valuable you are.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, that, of course, creates terrific pressure on the mothers. Career mothers have this terrible conflict within themselves because they want to do the best thing for their children, and yet they're told by the world that they're not any importance unless they're successful in their career.
We could also send funny signals to our kids saying, you're not going to be an important person unless you end up doing well in your career.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, that's true.
And that's a burden to learn, isn't it?
Several girls in girls' schools have talked to me, and I remember reading a non-Christian writer in the newspaper columns saying how when in high school they were asked what they wanted to be with them, you know, they said, I want to be a mother. They were ridiculed and put down because this was an inadequate kind of expression. This was a failure. And so one girl, I remember reading her saying how she became a lawyer, did that, then resigned in order to become a mother, and she's never been as happy as she was.
Yes.
Now she realises that what she was taught at high school was wrong.
Yeah.
And not every woman's blissfully happy in being a mother, and I'm not saying they all have to stay at home and be mums, but...
But the ones who want to should be able to, and should be valued.
That's the theory.
Yes.
Whereas it's not in practice. In the schools today, the girls are told they can be anything and everything they want to be.
Except mothers. Let's talk about preschools for a moment. It's now the trendy thing to start whizzing the kids off to preschools at younger and younger ages, good or bad?
Warehousing them. One of the problems in child raising is always the concrete. You can always think of circumstances and situations where this would be a good thing. Through necessities, through the fact that the child is individual and is different and they might have particular needs or special needs. The absolute is something that's very hard to say about child raising. However, having said that, more and more evidence, I understand, is coming to show that it's very bad. Now, many of us have felt it for intuitive reasons. You know, the kid should be raised by mum and dad. It's just a long-standing intuition. Yeah. But we've been keeping on told, no, it's good for early development, it's good for their socialisation, it's good for... The fact that it was conveniently good also for career and financing and having a bigger mortgage...
And having a bigger home.
..made some of us a little sceptical and cynical about it. But now people like Steve Bidoff are writing and saying, no, the research is showing us that there's problems. I mean, here's an article that I saw the other day in the papers that he wrote of.
Steve Bidoff is the author of a book on raising boys and has... an expert in this area.
Yes, and he's saying that a lot of the daycare centres in England now are, 22% of the nursery places are unfulfilled because a slew of research from large and well-designed studies has found that too much daycare harms under threes in several ways. Lacking one-to-one care, the fine interactions between a loving parent or family member and a baby or toddler do not happen. Group care by paid strangers is dulled and muted version of the love babies are meant to receive around the clock. Quality care from university-trained carers, stable staff in high ratios, is helpful but doesn't eliminate the damage. Care-raised babies don't all become psychopaths, but they are measurably more anxious, aggressive and disobedient as they move through preschool and primary grades. We even know why this is so. The stress hormone, cortisol, measured in a baby's saliva, doubles if they are placed in care and is still elevated months after they start. It also rises as the day goes on, whereas it falls away in home-raised babies. Australian studies have replicated this. Elevated cortisol suppresses growth, including brain growth, and reduces immunity.
I mean, it seems pretty clear, doesn't it?
Well, yes, if that's true, and I've got no reason to think it's not true.
It's worrying stuff.
It's very worrying. Mm. And he says, Sweden, which again was a place which is very big on let's have every child in daycare, very few, only 500 children now in Sweden in daycare.
Yes.
Because the evidence is against it. But Australia's behind the times, so we've still got 10,000 children in daycare.
And we're still pushing it.
And we're still pushing it as the solution to our problems. Part of the problem, he says, under three, up to the age of three, it's not good.
Mm.
Now, part of our problems, and here is the difficulty of child raising, it's not an isolated single issue. It's part of a complex of issues. So once you have double income families, you then have very expensive housing.
Yes.
Once you have very expensive housing, then you've got to have double income families. And of course, when you don't have children, you don't have to have a big house. But once you start having children, that's when you need the big house. And so the big mortgage. And so you've got to go to work.
Mm.
So although he sees that under three is really bad for childcare, he really says that we should have paid maternity leave for 12 months. Because politically, it's impossible to have it for 3 years. I mean that.
But that would be ideal.
Well, yes and no. I mean, that's ridiculous because if you have five children, 3 years apart, you'd be on paid maternity leave for 15 years. I mean, it's just
impractical.
It's not totally impractical.
Yes.
In a day when basically one income paid for a family instead of one income paying for an individual.
So we're living in a materialistic society and children are paying the cost.
Yes, they pay the cost for our materialism all the time.
Let's move on from preschool to school. Sending our children to a public school or a Christian school. There's been a blossoming of Christian schools recently.
Is it your intention that we divide the audience and alienate half of the population? Just
you can decide. We'll now weigh it up. Philip will now weigh it up for you and let you know what's what in both areas. But you can decide. You see, we're not telling you.
Well, there are state schools, church schools and Christian schools.
Right.
In my own experience, I went to both state and church school, and in my children's actions, some went all the way through state school, some went to state and to a church school. None of them went to Christian school particularly. There are pros and cons in all. I'm glad we've got more than one system. It is the secularists and the atheists who want to insist on only state schools because they can control the agenda and curriculum of state schools and stop religion being taught in those schools effectively. The Roman Catholics rejected the settlement in the 19th century about education. The Protestants went along. But the whole settlement was done in an age when everybody was Christian.
Mm.
And so there's a basic assumption of society, which doesn't exist anymore.
And the RE classes that still exist in some states in Australia are a remnant from that era.
That's right. And if you want multiculturalism, you can't have one state system.
Mm.
Can't have it both ways. The more multicultural we become, the more diverse will be our educational requirements and desires.
Different communities want their schools.
That's right. And the other option is, of course, move to the lowest common denominator. So you just actually remove all cultural appendages out of education, which no one wants, except the secularists who think that theirs is a culture-free experience. So we're in trouble in terms of the government exercising too much authority through the state system, and I'm glad that we've got a dual system that you can choose. Different ones of my children had different needs. And so different schools were where we sent our children. It was a bit painful because we had three different high schools that we had to attend. A lot of P&C meetings and problems like that. But, well, what are the advantages and disadvantages of them? Certainly in our system, the private schools are just so much better organised than the state schools. You know, I mean, they would tell you what the textbooks were.
He's going to get letters about that, but
provide for you the textbooks before term started.
Yes.
Whereas one of my children in year 12 had distributed the year 11 textbook halfway through the year, which when you're considering, you know, they're facing the HSC.
Not good.
No. And so, but that's got to do with lack of resources. It's not the teacher's fault, you know, I mean, it's just lack of resources. And there's not many votes to win in education. There's only votes to lose. So money has not been spent there. The state school system's really in difficulty. However, As a Christian, we want to be part of society. 70% or 65% of the community goes to the state schools. So my knee-jerk reaction is to put my children into state school systems, because that's where the society, why should we be different? See, the aim of raising my children is to take someone who is totally dependent upon me and turn it into someone who is going to be independent of me. Now, how am I going to do that except by introducing them to the world? Now, the rate at which we introduce them to the world, well, that's what a parent has to decide, given what this child is like.
Everyone's an individual. And each child has different needs.
Suburb?
Every school is different.
Every school is different.
Yeah.
And so how we introduce them. Now, some people want to say, I know, in my schooling for my children, I want them to have a Christian schooling. I don't have a problem with that, except where now am I going to introduce them to the non-Christian world?
Mm.
That's my problem. Now, the answer is, of course, well, when I do, they'll be better equipped for it because they've got a Christian worldview. And so there's... the church schools differ from the Christian schools in the past because they are old schools that have tended to be private schools rather than Christian schools. Many of them becoming much more Christian now that we're moving into multiculturalism, which is a good thing. But the Christian schools often only employ Christians in the staffing. And so they're giving the children a Christian view of the world. That has its strength. But its weakness is you're doing it in isolation from the world. Whereas the state schools, you're plonking them straight in the deep end of the swimming pool.
So it seems to me there are arguments on both sides.
Yes.
And you need to decide on the basis of where you are, what the local schools are like, what your child is like.
I think so.
Last couple of minutes, let me take you back to what we do with them in the home, because we want to raise our children Christianly. We want to introduce them to the Bible. We have family devotions with them. How's the best way to go about that?
Well, firstly is to understand what the Bible says about them. So the Bible says that they're sinful. Therefore, I mustn't be surprised when my children are sinful. I must organise the rules of the household on the assumption that they're going to be sinful and not be shocked horror than they do. Likewise, outside the home. I've got to expect my children are going to tell me lies. Certainly, you've got to trust your children and live in a relationship of trust and love and that kind of thing. But it doesn't mean you live in a foolishness that says, oh, my children would never do that.
Yes.
Your children would.
All children would.
All children would.
Yes.
Therefore, I need to protect them. Now, the Bible says that folly is bound up in the heart of the youth. And so I need to protect them from their own folly. And that's an important part of providing for them the decisions, especially when they're not ready to make the right decisions themselves. Now, more studies on brains have shown us that the adult brain isn't really developed till the child's 25, which is reflected in the driving insurance policies.
Yes,
we've known it for years.
Teenagers really drive the way they do because they've got no idea what the consequences
That's
will
right.
be.
They don't think about consequences intuitively until their mid-20s. Therefore, I need to put protections around them, like peep plate, you know, and so on.
And maybe as a parent, I make some rules
about
yes.
it. Well, one of our household rules was you didn't get your L's until after you finished high school.
Right.
Now, they could have, by age, had them earlier, but we knew once you got them, the distractions are great. So, mind you, as soon as they finished that HSC, they were all down there for their L's. But we just postponed certain things for their protection.
Yes.
Because foolishness is bound up in the heart of every youth. It's not just the Jensen gene that they had.
It's the human gene.
It's the human gene that yes. they have that means they need protection and that means they need direction
right.
on certain things. Now, how do I give direction? If the only time I give direction is when there's a crisis, it's too late. By reading the Bible with them and by praying with them regularly and consistently, we teach a whole value system and world value system, which we can then talk about in terms of the crucial decisions they need to make. And so they can learn why our family doesn't drink alcohol, why we don't gamble.
So before the heat's on, they've thought their way through these issues.
That's right. We've got the conversation happening.
Yes.
Without any reference to what are you doing this Saturday night or
yes.
how late yes. you're going to be home or anything like that. So that when the issues are out, you can do it. And we teach them to pray and to learn to pray in all the circumstances of life. That's not going to come naturally. That's not going to come when they grow up. They'll think, oh, that'd be a good idea. Why don't I do that?
Yes.
It happens.
And we model how you pray.
Yes.
Yes.
But we also, I mean, I was greatly helped here by my wife, who was brilliant at these things. She would read the Bible to them, but reading to them was part of life as well. So she'd read Winnie the Pooh,
yes,
and then pick up Deuteronomy. It was all part of her mothering her children that she would do it. She found the best way of reading to the children was just start at Genesis and go through to Revelation.
Oh, really?
She just read. There were all kinds of books we tried. The Leading Little Ones to God was a terrific systematic theology book, which really worked. We sometimes read Pilgrim's Progress, the Children's Pilgrim Progress, or missionary biographies. But basically the thing that worked best was Genesis to Revelation. Yeah. Sat down and read them. And when they got to a certain age in fluency of reading, she'd get them to do some of it as well, so they'd read. Always tricky that the littlest one can't understand what the oldest one, you know, there's, yes, that kind of juggling. But on the other hand, it teaches the oldest one to be patient with the little one.
Yes.
And it teaches the little one that they've still got something to learn. So we by and large held them together, although for some years there, you know, Dad would take one and read that while Mum would take the others and read to them.
28 minutes ago, we started talking about raising children.
We've only just started.
We've only just started.
It's a lifetime.
We need to come back and talk about this another time.
It'll be good fun.
It would be.